The thing about comparing rates at Progressive.com is that by now you've heard a lot of ads about comparing rates at Progressive.com. We probably don't even need the words comparing rates anymore to remind you that seasoning steaks at Progressive.com is an easy way to save on car insurance. Or that swimming in trousers helps you find the lowest rate. And that's the thing about foraging for truffles. You've heard a lot of ads about standing tiptoe on a cinder block. Compare rates and sing softly to a wounded field mouse and save at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations.
HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Delhi Decoded. I'm Pritika Khanna, your host, and I'm here with your weekly update from the national capital. In this podcast, each episode, we pick a pin code from Delhi and dive into the most famous buildings, landmarks, and stories from that pin code. For those of you who are from Delhi, I'm sure you have some very special memories from these places. For those of you who aren't, don't worry, I'll help you get a peek into the pulse of Delhi.
Hamari apni Delhi.
The extended lockdown imposed in March has impacted livelihoods across the board. According to estimates, the number of people who will fall below the poverty line is also likely to increase in India. There are attempts being made across the board to revive the economy. Experts believe that it is key to focus on the most vulnerable sections, which should require development policies to be changed at the levels of the government, civil society, and even corporate social responsibility. In Delhi's 11004, where the parliament is situated, the issue of revival of the social sector was a key discussion point in the recent session. Deloitte India has come up with a report titled Social Response to COVID-19, which lays out a roadmap to recovery in a post-COVID-19 world. The report looks at what sectors need to do to respond to the crisis and recover from it. I have with me Viral Thakkar, partner at Deloitte India, to discuss the report and give us some insights into what is needed currently. Hi, thank you so much for joining me on Delhi Decoded today.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure to be here.
Deloitte has recently come out with a report on the social response to COVID-19. Could you tell us what the report is talking about?
The origin of the report, you know, has been in the context of COVID-19 and the impact that the crisis has had on, and this is India focused, right? We thought we'd look at a number of areas that have been most impacted by COVID, right? So we looked at six basic areas, livelihood, rural development, skill development, education, health, and what we call WASH, which is water, sanitation, and hygiene. So you could argue it's eight areas, but you know, we really looked at these areas to say what has been the impact of COVID, what challenges have been, you know, further exacerbated with in the context of COVID, and how can companies are anyways looking for ways to leverage their CSR initiatives, how can they or what areas could they focus on so as to minimize the impact of COVID on these areas, but also then try to see where they can play a greater role. So that's how we looked at it, and that's what that's what the study represents.
What do you see as the impact that, you know, this extended lockdown that we saw initially, and especially it comes at a time where now we're seeing different parts of the world also heading to a second round of lockdown. What according to you has been the impact of such extended lockdowns on developmental issues across?
Right. As you might recall, and you rightly pointed out that many parts of Europe, for example, are now headed into the second wave, right? We heard yesterday that England has now enforced a very strict lockdown, right? So their second lockdown, and many parts of Europe are following as well. And scenarios and our analysis, seems to suggest that this is going to go stay with us for several quarters. Even though the vaccine might come around in the next 3-4 months, get all of our population vaccinated will take some time, right? So to that extent, this is going to stay with us for a while. And we are expecting what we call a W shape, right? So you might have several waves that unfortunately might hit us, right? As we open up, there could be a wave. And we will see the country being impacted differently. So unlike the first lockdown that shut down the entire country, it's possible that future lockdowns might be somewhat more localized. So, you know, hypothetically, if there are cases that rise in Mumbai, Mumbai might impose a lockdown for a period of time, whereas other parts of Maharashtra or neighboring states may still remain open, right? So there could be different ways that, cities and states might go in and out of lockdown. Now, to your question on, what were the biggest impacts, right? So as you know, in our complete lockdown, we had, pretty much a cessation in most economic activity, but that also was coupled with a significant, labor migration across the country and disruptions in supply chains and access to services, right? Which also meant that a number of these poverty alleviation programs within communities, which often are the first steps that families take out of poverty, were impacted, right? We know through research that healthcare is the biggest reason why families that have just come out of poverty will fall back into or below the poverty line, right? And we believe that, and this is published, that as a result of this crisis, world over, an additional 100 to 130 million people could fall back into the below the poverty line category, right? So in our global fight against poverty, the COVID crisis will unfortunately have a pretty big impact.
You mentioned that the survey covers six sectors. Can you take us through what the survey talks about when it comes to livelihood and rural development?
When it comes to livelihoods and rural development, number of challenges, we saw disruption in the agriculture cycle, agri-supply chain, harvesting of, et cetera, et cetera. There was some amount of loss of income because we had shutdown of MSMEs and micro enterprises. We had, price distortion because, transportation wasn't really available and therefore, pricing wasn't very efficient. We had reverse migration causing, pressure on the rural economy and social welfare schemes. Obviously our health infrastructure wasn't really prepared to handle this crisis, right? So that's the other thing that in my mind was also impacted. An interesting thing was, while in general, we'll acknowledge that as a country, we are our hygiene and social distancing isn't really, we aren't really as well adapted that as some of the Western countries are. I must say the awareness around hygiene and social distancing has certainly gone up, right, through the crisis. So we've across cities and in rural communities, that's one change that that I've certainly seen.
A sector that has had to pivot a lot in the last few months has been education. What are the changes recommended for this sector?
In my mind, or based on at least our research, ensuring greater coverage for people under the various social welfare schemes and the benefits. Again, we've had tremendous success with Aadhaar-linked benefit distribution and linking it to distribution systems. So those have obviously been good starting points, but that does need to be implementation to the last person, right? Needs to be ensured. Second, and a related area is promoting what we call watershed activities and provision of clean drinking water, right? So, I know there is a big initiative to provide pipe water to all households in the country over the next few years. But even as that happens, it's important to have sustainable water sources at the local level where possible, right? So obviously not all parts of the country will have that, but through recharging the underground aquifers, making sure that these resources are regenerated, right? So that this can be as sustainable in the long term as possible. So that's the other important bit that comes to mind. If I were to think about, we've actually grouped these into three buckets, right? Respond, recover, and thrive, right? So what's the short term, medium term, and long term? So in the short term, we were thinking that, dry ration coverage, right? So making sure that people are, the right people are covered under PDS and making sure that they have access to dry ration. Greater partnership with corporates and organizations that would help fill in gaps in medical infrastructure, because at the rural level, the infrastructure may not be consistently available in all states, right? So mm-hmm. wherever corporates can come in, those would be two immediate areas. In the medium term, to the extent that some of the labor force can be deployed in the in the local areas, through a combination of virtual work and distributed manufacturing, which we are possibly that's one of the ways to mitigate against lockdowns at the local level. The second is farm reforms. Again, APMC I know is a sensitive topic, and that will work itself out whichever way, but to whatever extent that can be made efficient will be important. Localized irrigation and water management systems will be another important initiative to focus on in the short to in the medium term. And then electrification through solar and other renewable sources, right? So to the extent that we can have a sustainable model at the local level, even as the grid expands to all villages in the country, some of these local initiatives to bring in solar or wind-based power, that can really unburden the local farming communities and really have them diversify into better crops and higher value crops, could really benefit the local economy, right? So that's another area that we are seeing a lot of traction, a lot of companies focus on. One other thing that we are seeing, right? So many of us, you and I included, have been working from home over the last few months, right? Mm-hmm. And at some level, it's in many cases it doesn't matter where you are physically located, right? As long as you are productive and knowledge worker, and it's not inconceivable that with the right kind of infrastructure, traction in tier 2 and tier 3 cities could improve, right? So you could see greater, more people in those locations, and that itself has a multiplier effect on the local economy.
True.
Right. And secondly, obviously, as our broad infrastructure improves through the country, right, to have, local manufacturing, right. So we are. You obviously seen a lot of press around companies diversifying their global supply chains, and to the extent that India can attract some of the global manufacturers to set up presence, that also has a multiplier impact on local economy. Right. So those are some of the areas to look at. Again, it's not a CSR focus, but it's those are some of the areas that state governments would likely be looking at to attract global employers. Okay. and then among other long-term initiatives, one can think of, greater focus on, waste management, sewage management, and water harvesting systems, as well as bringing in greater irrigation, right? So as you know, many of our current practices, utilize what we call flood irrigation, right? Which means you just flood your farm, which is fine when you have abundant water, but when you are possibly looking at a water stressed country, which India might become, it will be good to bring in greater irrigation practices as well.
Of course, I think water will be a very key factor going ahead.
In fact, you know, there is some recent research that suggests that future wars could be fought over water, right? So it's going to be a very important commodity. Sure, it's important for us to preserve to the extent possible.
Health is a sector that has come to the limelight and also one that everyone is watching. What are the challenges there?
So education is coupled with skill development, right? So education, depending on who you look at, has had different impacts. So one is at the K through 12, right? The school level education, right? And I'll talk about education in three buckets, the K through 12, okay. You know, the tertiary, which is the college, and ongoing learning and skill development, right? K through 12, significant disruption because, physical closure of schools. And obviously, for those of us living in big cities, have been fortunate that, you know, teachers and schools took to Zoom and other platforms. But bear in mind that it doesn't really, there are so many others who don't really have access to even smartphones and computers.
True,
right?
The entire idea of online education has come from a lot of privilege. You need a lot of access to basic infrastructure. Right?
And you know, when we interviewed some of the folks, they said, look, we have a smartphone in the family, but we have two kids, right? So you have one smartphone in the family, but two kids. And you know, it just becomes really hard to share the phone. And, you know, so one child gets education one day, the other one gets the education the other day, and so on, right? So just those have become really complex, you know, on the ground challenges for a lot of families. And second is, as you know, these things do consume a lot of bandwidth. Right? So even though, you know, we are fortunate that data prices are very low in this country, but it's really still is, you know, it does cost money to get access to all of that data, right? So that's also been a big challenge. We've seen some NGOs respond by seeking used or secondhand smartphones from, you know, urban families that no longer need because you got the latest iPhone, whatever, right? So one is to collect those and make them available. Some nonprofit schools have actually distributed, you know, tablets and smartphones to their students. So we've seen some examples like that. But in general, it has been, so there have been twofold problems, right? One is the infra itself, where availability of equipment and access to high-speed data, etc. And second is, just as a learning medium, if you are, you know, for younger kids, it's not really that easy, right, to immediately switch to online learning, right?
Absolutely.
And obviously, it's creating other problems where, you know, eyesight and other issues for you know, young children can't be staring at a screen for that long, especially if you're using a smartphone at home and all that. So that's the K through 12 type challenge. The challenge for colleges have been that many colleges have deferred opening or have delayed their opening by some margin. Colleges, especially those around board exams and so on, have had their own set of challenges where board exams are likely to be postponed or advanced, and there's some uncertainty around that. And you know, we all know how in this country, you know, everything is around your scores and marks at the board level and various entrance exams. So that's been for university students, and obviously a lot of the lab work is unavailable. And finally, from an ongoing skill program perspective, where you know, there's a lot of work that NGOs do with on the job type skill development and training, which is focused on making people employable, have simply suffered, right, where you just don't have the ability to, you know, spend time with the candidates. So those have been a bit of a challenge. This has also resulted in a greater number of dropouts. And this obviously creates an increasingly wider learning gap.
Hmm.
Right. And then, you know, from a skill development perspective, it creates an issue with your ability to place people and ultimate retention rates of employees. Right. And obviously the biggest sectors that employ, people who've been developed through the various skill development programs have typically been hospitality, tourism, retail, etc. Right. Mm-hmm. And those are the sectors that have also gone through a lot of slump. Right. Because malls were closed. Hotels have obviously still been closed. Tourism, etc. are just coming back up, and aviation's operating at a fraction of its capacity. So the sectors that have done reasonably well are consumer products and healthcare. But not really something that can readily use, people with, certification and other skilling programs, right? So that's been a bit limiting, for them. In general, the recommendation in such a case is, I mentioned a few examples that we talked about, right? For school kids, what NGOs are doing and so on. But there is, greater, support and relief to trainees and staff through a combination of shelter, transport, stipend, and even nutrition and others, so that we can continue to enhance their skills while at the same time preparing them for full-time type roles. Second is, where there is a, and this is probably an area where some of the state governments can step in, where they could provide grant support on a temporary basis, while those skilled employees are being absorbed made productive. Government can step in and support for a period of time. So in many countries, for example, for interns and for apprentice type programs, local governments will fund the company, right? They'll say, look, we'll pay for the first 3 months of this person's salary. Because by then they would become productive and so on, right? And companies wouldn't mind that, that kind of support. and then a lot of companies are leveraging digital training media to try and upskill their people, even while they are, they are remote and so on. We saw this across many clients where online learning and the consumption of online learning literally has gone up, 7 to 8 times because people, at least some of the motivated people are taking advantage of the crisis and trying to say, can I upgrade my skills?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? But obviously that's something where, corporates can leverage their CSR initiatives to enhance this in the local market as well.
I know this one is tough to do. But to wrap up the conversation, if you had to pick the top three things that we need to do for social sectors to thrive, what would they be?
We obviously still don't have a stable and a reliable, health, water, sanitation, and hygiene infrastructure in the country, right? So that's something that, and this is true for urban and rural areas. And then availability of medical supplies and equipment has also not been that consistent, coupled with a challenge at the healthcare professional level where they often they've had limited safety equipment, PPEs weren't very widely available early on, and long working hours. And then you had a lot of migrant movement across the country, which also created, population density in a different area, right? So you were, rather than Mumbai, you had a lot more people in say, one of the smaller towns, which strained the infrastructure in those places.
Like we saw in Bihar.
Spiking and so on, right? Yeah. So, and because those towns and cities weren't necessarily meant to take on that much load. That created a lot of pressure on them. And obviously, even as the country is indebted to the frontline workers, but you know, not all of them had access to you know, PPEs and the safety equipment, right? So that wasn't really consistently available, at least. And then, you know, that was obviously a big challenge early on. But since then, again, a lot of, you know, not just the governments, but also NGOs and corporates have come together to make, sanitizers, disinfectants, etc., available, not just to the frontline workers, but also to vulnerable and low resource households across the country. So that's really good. But the challenges with water and sanitation continue to remain, because they've been there for a while, right? It's not something that's going to be solved overnight. In terms of the solutions or things that we saw, we had a number of companies that focused on local manufacturing of medical equipment and supplies, including ventilators. We had a lot more awareness coming in, right? Some of this thing is now being covered through the public distribution systems. Awareness programs, etc., are available. But going forward, I think, we discussed this earlier, where some of the water and hygiene solutions, both waste disposal and treatment is going to be important. Mm-hmm. Even as we look at corporates leveraging their presence in some of the smaller cities to build secondary and tertiary healthcare facilities, right, to complement what the public healthcare facilities already have, and then some very specific recommendations around what we call Anganwadi workers, right? Around hygiene, both hand hygiene, respiratory hygiene, COVID, etc. How do you expand your traditional view of frontline healthcare workers by expanding and training others as well? Second is, rapidly focus on the current initiative to provide pipe water to all of the rural households, right? I think there is that Jal Jeevan mission that's on the
agenda. Yes.
Right. So expanding or accelerating that. By the way, I don't know if you know, but many of our biggest cities already have, international quality water, right? In our water treatment plants. So at least in the urban areas where we have municipal water treatment plants, the water itself meets WHO and ISO standards, right? Our challenge often is the way we store the water in our tanks. We as a country have come a long way, but there is still, some ways to go. My mind, companies, through their CSR initiatives, working closely with NGOs and the various, central, state, and local community programs, I think can make impact. So we ourselves have to take this. COVID has been a bit of a wake up call, because we've now been sensitized to hygiene, for example, a lot more, right? And we can actually leverage this as almost a the bright side to this is that we are more aware. Can we now take advantage of this awareness and push through some of these programs, right? Just as many parts of the country said, they banned plastic, right? Single-use plastic has been banned, and we've come to appreciate that. Can we expand that to other areas as well?
Absolutely.
There are not three. I probably want to say 20 things, but so let me make
it top five. That's easier. Yeah.
so let me try, right? In my mind, and in no particular order. One of the things that I would, if I had the ability to make that wish list, I would definitely put waste treatment in our, you know, across all of our cities and at least tier two, tier three towns, right? So solid waste treatment as one of the priority areas, because sanitation in my mind has a big impact on health, causes and so on. So that would probably be number one on my list. Number two, and corporates coming together to complement and supplement the various healthcare initiatives, rural health centers and so on, to make healthcare available in a more ubiquitous manner. Third would be to tackle pollution. A lot of our pollution coming into the seas is coming in from rivers, right? So how can we, and again, we've seen a number of recent initiatives to build wastewater treatment and other plants so that we don't discharge sewage into our rivers. But just continuing that. And the fourth thing that I would definitely recommend or I would look for is to work with our farming communities to bring in greater adoption of irrigation and other water conservation techniques. And the fifth would be, and a connected point would be, renewable energy, right? Greater focus on renewable energy. We as a country are already, fairly ahead of our commitments, but given the climate change and the impact that it might have on the country, it's up to us to decarbonize, to the extent possible. Because we'll only benefit, right? So we are the, as a country, we are going to benefit, and to the extent possible, we should try and look for that.
Absolutely. I think that sums it up really well. Thank you so much for joining us today on Really Decoded. That's all from me this week. I'll be back next week with a new PIN code. Until then, please like, subscribe and share this episode. We're always looking to hear your thoughts and suggestions. We're ever present on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at HD Smartcast. You can also reach out to me directly on Twitter at Pritika Khanna. Thank you so much for joining in. See you next time. Until then, stay safe and healthy.
This was a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
HD Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.